Chapter 3. I was now set up for a guinea trader, and my friend, to my great misfortune, dying soon after his arrival, I resolved to go the same voyage again, and I embarked in the same vessel with one, who was his mate in the former voyage, and had now got the command of the ship. This was the unhappiest voyage that ever man made, for though I did not carry quite L100 of my new gain wealth, so that I had L200 left, and which I lodged with my friend's widow, who was very just to me, yet I fell into terrible misfortunes in this voyage, and from the first was this, namely, our ship making her course towards the Canary Islands, or rather between those islands and the African shore, was surprised in the grey of the morning by a Turkish rover of Sally, who gave chase to us with all the sails she could make. We crowded also as much canvas as our yards would spread, or our masts carry, to have got clear, but finding the pirate gained upon us, and would certainly come up with us in a few hours, we prepared to fight, our ship having 12 guns, and the rogue 18. About 3 in the afternoon he came up with us, and bringing to, by mistake, just athwart our quarter, instead of athwart our stern, as he intended, we brought 8 of our guns to bear on that side, and poured in a broadside upon him, which made him sheer off again, after returning our fire, and pouring in also his small shot from near 200 men, which he had on board. However, we had not a man touched, all our men keeping close. He prepared to attack us again, and we to defend ourselves, but laying us on board the next time upon our other quarter, he entered 60 men upon our decks, who immediately fell to cutting and hacking the decks and rigging. We plied them with small shot, half pikes, powder chests, and such like, and cleared our deck of them twice. However, to cut short this melancholy part of our story, our ship being disabled, and 3 of our men killed and 8 wounded, we were obliged to yield, and were carried all prisoners into Sally, a port belonging to the Moors. The usage I had there was not so dreadful as at first I had apprehended, nor was I carried up the country to the Emperor's court, as the rest of our men were, but was kept by the captain of the rover as his proper prize, and made his slave, being young and nimble, and fit for his business. At this surprising change of my circumstances from a merchant to a miserable slave, I was perfectly overwhelmed, and now I looked back upon my father's prophetic discourse to me, that I should be miserable, and have none to relieve me, which I thought was now so effectually brought to pass, that it could not be worse, that now the hand of heaven had overtaken me, and I was undone without redemption. But alas! This was but a taste of the misery I was to go through, as will appear in the sequel of this story. As my new patron, or master, had taken me home to his house, so I was in hopes that he would take me with him when he went to sea again, believing that it would some time or other be his fate to be taken by a Spanish or Portugal man of war, and that then I should be set at liberty. But this hope of mine was soon taken away, for when he went to sea, he left me on shore to look after his little garden, and do the common drudgery of slaves about his house, and when he came home again from his cruise, he ordered me to lie in the cabin, to look after the ship. Here I meditated nothing but my escape, and what method I might take to effect it, but found no way that had the least probability in it. Nothing presented to make the supposition of it rational, for I had nobody to communicate it to, that would embark with me, no fellow slave, no Englishman, Irishman, or Scotsman there but myself, so that for 2 years, though I often pleased myself with the imagination, yet I never had the least encouraging prospect of putting it in practice. After about 2 years an odd circumstance presented itself, which put the old thought of making some attempt for my liberty again in my head. My patron lying at home longer than usual without fitting out his ship, which, as I heard, was for want of money, he used constantly, once or twice a week, sometimes oftener, if the weather was fair, to take the ship's pinnace, and go out into the road a-fishing, and as he always took me and a young Maresco with him to row the boat, we made him very merry, and I proved very dexterous in catching fish, insomuch, that sometimes he would send me with a Moor, one of his kinsmen, and the youth Amaresco, as they called him, to catch a dish of fish for him. It happened one time that, going a-fishing in a star-calm morning, a fog rose so thick, that though we were not half a league from the shore we lost sight of it, and rowing we knew not whither or which way, we labored all day, and all the next night, and when the morning came found we were pulled off, to sea instead of pulling in for the shore, and that we were at least 2 leagues from the shore. However, we got well in again, though with a great deal of labor, and some danger, for the wind began to blow pretty fresh in the morning, but particularly we were all very hungry. But our patron, warned by this disaster, resolved to take more care of himself for the future, and having lying by him the longboat of our English ship which he had taken, he resolved he would not go a-fishing any more without a compass and some provision, so he ordered the carpenter of his ship, who was also an English slave, to build a little stateroom, or cabin, in the middle of the longboat, like that of a barge, with a place to stand behind it, to steer and haul home the main sheet, and room, before for a hand or two to stand and work the sails. She sailed with what we call a shoulder of mutton sail, and the boom jabbed over the top of the cabin, which lay very snug and low, and had in it room for him to lie, with a slave or two, and a table to eat on, with some small lockers to put in some bottles of such liquor as he thought fit to drink, particularly his bread, rice, and coffee. We went frequently out with this boat a-fishing, and as I was most dexterous to catch fish for him, he never went without me. It happened that he had appointed to go out in this boat, either for pleasure or for fish, with 2 or 3 Moors of some distinction in that place, and for whom he had provided extraordinarily, and had therefore sent on board the boat overnight a larger store of provisions than ordinary, and had ordered me to get ready 3 fusees with powder and shot, which were on board his ship, for that they designed some sport of fowling as well as fishing. I got all things ready as he had directed, and waited the next morning with the boat, washed clean, her ancient impedance out, and everything to accommodate his guests, when by and by my patron came on board alone, and told me his guests had put off going, upon some business that fell out, and ordered me with the man and boy, as usual, to go out with the boat and catch them some fish, for that his friends were to sup at his house, and commanded that as soon as I had got some fish, I should bring it home to his house, all which I prepared to do. This moment my former notions of deliverance darted into my thoughts, for now I found I was like to have a little ship at my command, and my master being gone, I prepared to furnish myself, not for a fishing business, but for a voyage, though I knew not, neither did I so much as consider, whither I should steer, for anywhere, to get out of that place, was my way. My first contrivance was to make a pretense, to speak to this Moor, to get something for our subsistence on board, for I told him we must not presume to eat of our patron's bread. He said that was true, so he brought a large basket of rusk or biscuit of their kind, and 3 jars with fresh water, into the boat. I knew where my patron's case of bottles stood, which it was evident by the make were taken out of some English prize, and I conveyed them into the boat, while the Moor was on shore, as if they had been there before for our master. I conveyed also a great lump of beeswax into the boat, which weighed above 50 weight, with a parcel of twine or thread, a hatchet, a saw, and a hammer, all of which were great use to us afterwards, especially the wax to make candles. Another trick I tried upon him, which he innocently came into also. His name was Ishmael, who they call Muli, or Moli, so I called to him, "Moli," said I, "our patron's guns are on board the boat, can you not get a little powder and shot? It may be we may kill some alchemies of fowl like our curlews for ourselves, for I know he keeps the gunner's stores in the ship." "Yes," says he, "I'll bring some," and accordingly he brought a great leather pouch, which held about 1.5 pounds of powder, or rather more, and another with shot, that had 5 or 6 pounds, with some bullets, and put all into the boat. At the same time I had found some powder of my master's in the great cabin, with which I filled one of the large bottles in the case, which was almost empty, pouring what was in it into another, and thus furnished with everything needful, we sailed out of the port to fish. The castle, which is at the entrance of the port, knew who we were, and took no notice of us, and we were not above a mile out of the port, before we hauled in our sail, and set us down to fish. The wind blew from the NNE, which was contrary to my desire, for had it blown southerly I had been sure to have made the coast of Spain, and at least reached to the Bay of Cadiz, but my resolutions were, blow which way it would, I would be gone from the horrid place where I was, and leave the rest to fate. After we had fished some time and catched nothing, for when I had fish on my hook I would not pull them up, that he might not see them, I said to the Moor, this will not do, our master will not be thus served, we must stand farther off. He, thinking no harm, agreed, and being in the head of the boat set the sails, and as I had the helm I run the boat out near a league farther, and then brought her to as if I would fish, when giving the boy the helm, I stepped forward to where the Moor was, and making as if I stooped for something behind him, I took him by surprise with my arm under his twist, and tossed him clear overboard into the sea. He rose immediately, for he swam like a cork, and called to me, begged to be taken in, told me he would go all the world over with me. He swam so strong after the boat, that he would have reached me very quickly, there being but little wind, upon which I stepped into the cabin, and fetching one of the fowling pieces, I presented it at him, and told him I had done him no hurt, and if he would be quiet I would do him none. But, said I, you swim well enough to reach to the shore, and the sea is calm, make the best of your way to shore, and I will do you no harm, but if you come near the boat I'll shoot you through the head, for I am resolved to have my liberty. So he turned himself about, and swam for the shore, and I make no doubt but he reached it with ease, for he was an excellent swimmer. I could have been content to have taken this Moor with me, and have drowned the boy, but there was no venturing to trust him. When he was gone I turned to the boy, whom they called Xuri, and said to him, Xuri, if you will be faithful to me I'll make you a great man, but if you will not stroke your face, to be true to me, this is, swear by Muhammad and his father's beard, I must throw you into the sea too. The boy smiled in my face, and spoke so innocently, that I could not mistrust him, and swore to be faithful to me, and go all over the world with me. While I was in view of the Moor that was swimming, I stood out directly to sea with the boat, rather stretching to windward, that they might think me gone towards the strait's mouth, as indeed any one that had been in their wits must have been supposed to do, for who would have supposed we were sailed on to the southward to the truly barbarian coast, where whole nations of negroes were sure to surround us with their canoes, and destroy us, where we could ne'er once go on shore but we should be devoured by savage beasts, or more merciless savages of humankind? But as soon as it grew dusk in the evening, I changed my course, and steered directly south and by east, bending my course a little toward the east, that I might keep in with the shore, and having a fair, fresh gale of wind, and a smooth, quiet sea, I made such sail, that I believe by the next day at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, when I first made the land, I could not be less than 150 miles south of Sally, quite beyond the Emperor of Morocco's dominions, or indeed of any other king in thereabouts, for we saw no people. Yet such was the fright I had taken at the Moors, and the dreadful apprehensions I had of falling into their hands, that I would not stop, or go on shore, or come to an anchor, the wind continuing fair, till I had sailed in that manner 5 days, and then the wind shifting to the southward, I concluded also, that if any of our vessels were in chase of me, they also would now give over, so I ventured to make to the coast, and came to an anchor in the mouth of a little river, I knew not what, or where, neither what latitude, what country, what nations, or what river. I neither saw, nor desired to see, any people, the principal thing I wanted was fresh water. We came into this creek in the evening, resolving to swim on shore as soon as it was dark, and discover the country, but as soon as it was quite dark we heard such dreadful noises of the barking, roaring, and howling of wild creatures, of we knew not what kinds, that the poor boy was ready to die with fear, and begged me not to go on shore till day. "Well, Xury," said I, "then I won't, but it may be we may see men by day, who will be as bad to us as these lions." "Then we give them the shoot-gun," says Xury, laughing, "make them run away." Such English Xury spoke by conversing among us slaves. However, I was glad to see the boy so cheerful, and I gave him a dram out of our patron's case of bottles to cheer him up. After all, Xury's advice was good, and I took it. We dropped our little anchor and lay still all night. I say still, for we slept none, for in 2 or 3 hours we saw vast great creatures we knew not what to call them of many sorts come down to the seashore and run into the water, wallowing and washing themselves for the pleasure of cooling themselves, and they made such hideous howlings and yellings, that I never indeed heard the like. Xury was dreadfully frightened, and indeed so was I too, but we were both more frighted, when we heard one of these mighty creatures come swimming towards our boat. We could not see him, but we might hear him by his blowing, to be a monstrous huge and furious beast. Xury said it was a lion, and it might be so for aught I know, but poor Xury cried to me to weigh the anchor and row away. "No," says I, "Xury, we can slip our cable with the buoy to it, and go off to sea, they cannot follow us far." I had no sooner said so, but I perceived the creature whatever it was within 2 oars length, which something surprised me. However, I immediately stepped to the cabin door, and taking up my gun, fired at him, upon which he immediately turned about and swam towards the shore again. But it is impossible to describe the horrible noises, and hideous cries and howlings, that were raised, as well upon the edge of the shore as higher within the country, upon the noise or report of the gun, a thing I have some reason to believe those creatures had never heard before. This convinced me that there was no going on shore for us in the night upon that coast, and how to venture on shore in the day was another question too, for to have fallen into the hands of any of the savages had been as bad as to have fallen into the hands of lions and tigers. At least we were equally apprehensive of the danger of it. Be that as it would, we were obliged to go on shore somewhere or other for water, for we had not a pint left in the boat. When or where to get to it was the point. Xury said if I would let him go on shore with one of the jars, he would find if there was any water, and bring some to me. I asked him why he should go? Why I should not go and he stay in the boat. The boy answered with so much affection, that made me love him ever after. Says he, "If wild mans come, they eat me, you go away." "Well, Xury," said I, "we will both go, and if the wild mans come, we will kill them, they shall eat neither of us." So I gave Xury a piece of rusk bread to eat, and a dram out of our patron's case of bottles which I mentioned before, and we hauled in the boat, as near the shore, as we thought was proper, and so waited on shore, carrying nothing but our arms and 2 jars for water. I did not care to go out of sight of the boat, fearing the coming of canoes with savages down the river, but the boy, seeing a low place about a mile up the country, rambled to it, and by I saw him come running towards me. I thought he was pursued by some savage, or frighted with some wild beast, and I ran forward towards him to help him, but when I came nearer to him, I saw something hanging over his shoulders, which was a creature that he had shot, like a hare, but different in color, and longer legs. However, we were very glad of it, and it was very good meat, but the great joy that poor Xury came with was to tell me he had found good water, and seen no wild mans. But we found afterwards that we need not take such pains for water, for a little higher up the creek, where we found the water fresh, when the tide was out, which flowed but a little way up, so we filled our jars, and feasted on the hare we had killed, and prepared to go on our way, having seen no footsteps of any human creatures in that part of the country. As I had been one voyage to this coast before, I knew very well that the islands of the Canaries, and the Cape de Verde Islands also, lay not far off from the coast. but as I had no instruments to take an observation, to know what latitude we were in, and did not exactly know, or at least remember, what latitude they were in, I knew not where to look for them, or when to stand off to see towards them, otherwise I might now easily have found some of these islands. But my hope was, that if I stood along this coast till I came to that part where the English traded, I should find some of their vessels upon their usual design of trade, that would relieve and take us in. By the best of my calculation, that place where I will now was must be that country which, lying between the Emperor of Morocco's dominions and the Negroes, lies waste and uninhabited, except by wild beasts, the Negroes having abandoned it and gone farther south for fear of the Moors, and the Moors not thinking it worth inhabiting, by reason of its barrenness, and indeed both forsaking it because of the prodigious number of tigers, lions, leopards, and other furious creatures which harbor there, so that the Moors use it for their hunting only, where they go like an army, 2,000 or 3,000 men at a time, and indeed for near 100 miles together upon this coast we saw nothing but a waste uninhabited country by day, and heard nothing but howlings and roarings of wild beasts by night. Once or twice in the daytime I thought I saw the Pico of Being, the high top of the mountain Tenerife in the Canaries, and had a great mind to venture out in hopes of reaching thither. But having tried twice, I was forced in again by contrary winds, the sea also going too high for my little vessel, so I resolved to pursue my first design, and keep along the shore. Several times I was obliged to land for fresh water after we had left this place, and once in particular, being early in the morning, we came to an anchor under a little point of land which was pretty high, and the tide beginning to flow, we lay still to go farther in. Xuri, whose eyes were more about them than it seems mine were, calls softly to me, and tells me that we had best go farther off the shore, for, says he, look, yonder lies a dreadful monster on the side of that hillock fast asleep. I looked where he pointed, and saw a dreadful monster indeed, for it was a terrible great lion, that lay on the side of the shore, under the shade of a piece of the hill that hung, as it were, a little over him. Xuri, says I, you shall go on shore and kill him. Xuri looked frighted, and said, me kill. He ate me at one mouthful he meant. However, I said no more to the boy, but bade him lie still, and I took our biggest gun, which was almost musketbur, and loaded it with a good charge of powder, and with 2 slugs, and laid it down. Then I loaded another gun with 2 bullets, and the third, for we had 3 pieces, I loaded with 5 smaller bullets. I took the best aim I could with the first piece, to have him shot into the head, but he lay so with his leg raised a little above his nose, that the slugs hit his leg about the knee, and broke the bone. He started up growling at first, but finding his leg broke, fell down again, and then got up upon 3 legs. And gave the most hideous roar that ever I heard. I was a little surprised that I had not hit him on the head. However, I took up the 2nd piece immediately, and, though he began to move off, fired again, and shot him into the head, and had the pleasure to him drop, and make but little noise, but lay struggling for life. Then Xuri took heart, and would have me let him go on shore. Well, go, said I. So the boy jumped into the water, and taking a little gun in one hand, swam to shore with the other hand, and coming close to the creature, put the muzzle of the piece to his ear, and shot him into the head again, which dispatched him quite. This was game indeed to us, but this was no food, and I was very sorry to lose 3 charges of powder and shot upon a creature that was good for nothing to us. However, Xuri said he would have some of him. So he comes on board, and asked me to give him the hatchet. For what, Xuri? Said I. Me cut off his head, said he. However, Xuri could not cut off his head, but he cut off the foot, and brought it with him, and it was a monstrous great one. I bethought myself, however, that perhaps the skin of him might one way or other be of some value to us, and I resolved to take off his skin if I could. So Xuri and I went to work with him, but Xuri was much the better workman at it, for I knew very ill how to do it. Indeed, it took us both the whole day, but at last we got off the hide of him, and spreading it on the top of our cabin, the sun effectually dried it in 2 days' time, and it afterwards served me to lie upon. After the stop we made on to the southward continually for 10 or 12 days, living very sparing on our provisions, which began to abate very much, and going no oftener into the shore than we were obliged to for fresh water. My design in this was to make the river Gambia or Senegal, that is to say, anywhere about the Cape de Verde, where I was in hopes to meet with some European ship, and if I did not, I knew not what course I had to take, but to seek out for the lands, or perish there among the negroes. I knew that all the ships from Europe, which sailed either to the coast of Guinea or to Brazil, or to the East Indies, made this cape, or those islands, and in a word, I put the whole of my fortune upon this single point, either that I must meet with some ship, or must perish. When I had pursued this resolution about 10 days longer, as I have said, I began to see that the land was inhabited, and in 2 or 3 places, as we sailed by, we saw people stand upon the shore to look at us. We could also perceive they were quite black, and stark naked. I was once inclined to have gone on shore to them, but Xury was my better counselor, and said to me, "No go, no go." However, I hauled in nearer the shore that I might talk to them, and I found they ran along the shore by me a good way. I observed they had no weapons in their hands, except one, who had a long slender stick, which Xury said was a lance, and that they would throw them a great way with good aim. So I kept a distance, but talked with them by signs as well as I could, and particularly made signs for something to eat. They beckoned to me to stop my boat, and that they would fetch me some meat. Upon this I lowered the top of my sail, and lay by, and 2 of them ran up into the country, and in less than half an hour came back, and brought with them 2 pieces of dried flesh and some corn, such as is the produce of their country, but we neither knew what the one or the other was. However, we were willing to accept it, but how to come it was our next dispute, for I was not for venturing on shore to them, and they were as much afraid to us, but they took a safe way for us all, for they brought it to the shore and laid it down, and went and stood a great way off till we fetched it on board, and then came close to us again. We made signs of thanks to them, for we had nothing to make them amends. But an opportunity offered that very instant to oblige them wonderfully, for while we were lying by the shore came 2 mighty creatures, one pursuing the other, as we took it with great fury from the mountains towards the sea, whether it was the male pursuing the female, or whether they were in sport or in rage, we could not tell, any more than we could tell whether it was usual or strange, but I believe it was the latter, because in the first place, those ravenous creatures seldom appear. But in the night, and in the second place, we found the people terribly frightened, especially the women. The man that had the lance or dart did not fly from them, but the rest did. However, as the 2 creatures ran directly into the water, they did not seem to offer to fall upon any of the negroes, but plunged themselves into the sea, and swam about, as if they had come for their diversion. At last, one of them began to come nearer our boat than at first I expected, but I lay ready for him, for I had loaded my gun with all possible expedition, and bade Xury load both the others. As soon as he came fairly within my reach, I fired, and shot him directly into the head. Immediately he sunk down into the water, but rose instantly, and plunged up and down, as if he was struggling for life, and so indeed he was. He immediately made to the shore, but between the wound, which was his mortal hurt, and the strangling of the water, he died just before he reached the shore. It is impossible to express the astonishment of these poor creatures, at the noise and the fire of my gun. Some of them were even ready to die for fear, and fell down as dead with a very terror. But when they saw the creature dead, and sunk in the water, and that I made signs to them, to come to the shore, they took heart and came to the shore, and began to search for the creature. I found them by his blood staining the water, and by the help of a rope, which I slung round him, and gave the negroes to haul, they dragged him on the shore, and found that it was a most curious leopard, spotted, and fine to an admirable degree, and the negroes held up their hands with admiration, to think what it was I had killed him with. The other creature, frighted with the flash of fire and the noise of the gun, swam on shore, and ran directly to the mountains from whence they came, nor could I, at that distance, know what it was. I found quickly the negroes were for eating the flesh of this creature, so I was willing to have them take it as a favor from me, which, when I made signs to them that they might take him, they were very thankful for. Immediately they fell to work with him, and though they had no knife yet, with a sharpened piece of wood, they took off his skin as readily, and much more readily, than we could have done it with a knife. They offered me some of the flesh, which I declined, making as if I would give it them, but made signs for the skin, which they gave me very freely, and brought me a great deal more of their provision, which, though I did not understand, yet I accepted. Then I made signs to them for some water, and held out one of my jars to them, turning it bottom upward, to show that it was empty, and that I wanted to have it filled. They called immediately to some of their friends, and there came two women, and brought a great vessel made of earth, and burnt, as I suppose, in the sun. This they set down for me, as before, and I sent Xury on shore with my jars, and filled them all three. Their women were as stark naked as the men. I was now furnished with roots and corn, such as it was, and water, and leaving my friendly negroes, I made forward for about 11 days more, without offering to go near the shore, till I saw the land run out a great length into the sea, at about the distance of 4 or 5 leagues before me, and the sea being very calm, I kept a large offing, to make this point. At length, doubling the point, at about 2 leagues from the land, I saw plainly land on the other side, to seaward. Then I concluded, as it was most certain indeed, that this was the Cape de Verde, and those the islands, called from thence Cape de Verde Islands. However, they were at a great distance, and I could not well tell what I had best to do, for if I should be taken with a fresh of wind, I might neither reach one or other. In this dilemma, as I was very pensive, I stepped into the cabin, and sat me down, Xury having the helm, when, on a sudden, the boy cried out, "Master, master, a ship with a sail!" And the foolish boy was frighted out of his wits, thinking it must needs be some of his master's ships sent to pursue us, when I knew we were gotten far enough out of their reach. I jumped out of the cabin, and immediately saw, not only the ship, but what she was, namely, that it was a Portuguese ship, and, as I thought, was bound to the coast of Guinea, for negroes. But when I observed the course she steered, I was soon convinced they were bound some other way, and did not design to come any nearer to the shore, upon which I stretched out to sea as much as I could, resolving to speak with them, if possible. With all the sail I could make, I found I should not be able to come in their way, but they would be gone, by before I could make any signal to them, but after I had crowded to the utmost, and began to despair, they, it seems, saw me by the help of their perspective glasses, and that it was some European boat, which, as they supposed, must belong to some ship that was lost, so they shortened sail to let me come up. I was encouraged with this, and as I had my patron's ancient on board, I made a waft of it to them for a signal of distress, and fired a gun both of which they say, for they told me they saw the smoke, though they did not hear the gun. Upon these signals they very kindly brought to, and lay by for me, and in about 3 hours' time I came up with them. They asked me what I was, in Portuguese, and in Spanish, and in French, but I understood none of them, but at last a Scots sailor, who was on board, called to me, and I answered him, and told him I was an Englishman, that I had made my escape out of slavery from the Moors, at Sally. Then they bade me come on board, and very kindly took me in, and all my goods. It was an inexpressible joy to me, that any one will believe, that I was thus delivered, as I esteemed it, from such a miserable, and almost hopeless, condition as I was in, and I immediately offered all I had to the captain of the ship, as a return for my deliverance. but he generously told me he would take nothing from me, but that all I had should be delivered safe to me when I came to the Brussels. For, says he, I have saved your life on no other terms than I would be glad to be saved myself, and it may, one time or other, be my lot to be taken up in the same condition. Besides, says he, when I carry you to the Brussels, so great away from your own country, if I should take from you what you have, you will be starved there, and then I only take away that life I have given. No, no, Senior Inglis, says he, Mr. Englishman, I will carry you thither in charity, and those things will help you to buy your subsistence there, and your passage home again.